So how do we live lives that overcome? How do we live lives that endure? How do we live lives so that we become closer and closer in our walk with Jesus, both in the so that the actions and the contents of our lives are changed? How do we actually go about doing that? Well, to help us think more deeply about this question, I want to first consider a phrase that we use a lot in Christian circles, and then I want to look at a story of the Apostle Peter, okay? So, in Christian circles, when we're talking about our walk with Jesus, when we're talking about moving forwards, either into good things or through hard things, you can often hear people say, in response to this, I just need more of God. I just need more of God. Now, I want to go on record and say I totally agree with that 100%, right? So you don't have to get the shepherd's crook off yet. But the thing I'm always curious about is, what does that look like in practice? Like, what happens next? So people say, I just need more of God, and I would agree. Well, what happens next? Because I think that's important, okay? So to explore this idea of, I just need more of God, well, what does that look like and mean? What happens next? Let's look at the story of Peter and his betrayal of Jesus in the garden. Now, if you're not familiar with that story, Peter was one of the apostles of Jesus. Jesus had had the Last Supper with the disciples and told them that he was about to be betrayed, and then he was going to be sentenced to death. Peter said, there's no way, Jesus, that's going to happen. I'll stick with you. And Jesus says, well, actually, Peter, you're going to deny me three times. Okay? And he did. Jesus told Peter what was going to happen. Wouldn't that be nice sometimes in our lives? If Jesus could actually just say, here, by the way, you're about to have a bit of a challenge. Right? Jesus told Peter what was about to happen. Jesus had physically been with Peter for at least 3 years. That level of discipleship and intimacy and realness, right? And yet Peter still made the wrong choice. Now, I can kind of imagine Peter, if you'd been a Christian of our kind of day, failing and slumping against the wall and muttering to himself or to someone nearby, oh man, I just need more of God. Right? And he does. And so do we. But what does that mean? What does it look like? Now, those of us who know the story know that Peter actually went on to become the rock on which Jesus built the church. He did grow. He did change. But how? What happened? It's important for us because we too want to spiritually grow and mature, right? We want to walk away from our failings and towards strength. We want to be able to look over our shoulder after a number of years and see, I'm not who I was or where I was all that time ago. So what did Peter do? How did he get more of God? Practically, what did that look like? Well, I think to understand this, we first have to be clear about, why did Peter fail? What caused the failure? I think on one level, Peter failed because the ingrained habits of his life took over. I think the daily choices and the attitudes that Peter had worn and lived from for years and years and years came forward and, in a sense, made the choice for him. He had an old way of living, an old way of being, and it was still in control in times of stress and challenge. I mean, Peter had lived with Jesus and been around Jesus for about 3 years, right? But he'd lived a whole lot of time before then. Yeah? And that life and that way of being and those attitudes and those dispositions, those habits were ingrained within him. I think quite simply in the garden, Peter's old habits, his old attitudes, his disposition, his character was still more powerful than the new habits of righteousness. And in times of stress, it's that which was most familiar and most practiced that comes forward. So to be clear then, I think the problem was that the habits of Peter's old life, his attitudes, his default behavior had not yet been fully replaced by new ones, and so he failed. See, Peter had practiced living a particular way for many years before meeting Jesus. He'd practiced that. And the things that we practice, that's the things that we get good at. And what we practice is what we become. He'd practiced particular attitudes. He'd practiced particular actions. And they were held deep within him. This combination of kind of automatic tendencies and attitudes, commonly we just call that character, right? The things that we stand ready to do and say, that's our character, it's our disposition. So Peter's character had not yet been fully reformed. So in a time of challenge and strain, his old nature came forward and it made the choice for him. And I think understanding Peter's failing in this way helps us when we return to this idea of I just need more of God. And what does that mean? Practically, what happens next? See, personally, I don't believe that Peter would have fared any better in the garden if he had known more about God. I also don't think he would have fared better in the garden if he just had a few more experiences of Jesus. Right? I think he would have fared better in the garden if he'd incorporated the way of Jesus, the habits of Jesus, more fully into his life so that what he stood ready to do had changed. Now listen to Paul in Galatians. This is Galatians 5, 25 and 26, and I'm reading it from the Message because it pulls it out a bit more clearly. It says this, "Since this is the kind of life we have chosen, the life of the Spirit, let's make sure that we don't just hold it in our heads as an idea or as a sentiment in our heart, but let work out every implication in the details of our lives." So what Paul's saying there is, Peter didn't just need to hold more information about God in his heart. He didn't just need to have more experience in his head, rather, more experiences of God in his heart. He needed to have worked those things through. He needed to have translated them into the habits and the patterns and the behaviors and the attitudes of his life so that what he stood ready to do had changed. See, spiritual growth and vitality stem from what we actually do with our lives. It's from the habits that we form and then the character that's produced as a result. It's not from passive information that we hold in our heads. I heard a great quote about information, and it said, if more information was the answer, we'd all be millionaires with perfect abs. Right? If more information was the answer. But it's through the habits that God works to replace our old habits of sin with new habits of righteousness. Peter needed, and we need, more of God. But that's not through the passive gathering of information. But it's through a lifestyle of integrating God's ways into our very daily habits. Getting more of God, then, is dynamic. It's active. If we read in Galatians what Paul writes about live by the Spirit, a fair translation of that instruction to live by the Spirit would actually be lifestyle by the Spirit. Lifestyle by the Spirit, a phrase that we're really familiar with. And to lifestyle just means the way in which you live, right? So Paul says the way in which you live should be by the Spirit. Let's tease that out a wee bit. If you have a healthy lifestyle, it means you're orientated towards health. Okay? What that would look like then is your diary, your daily routine, your wardrobe, the contents of your kitchen cupboards, the books, your diary, they would all reflect this leaning towards a healthy lifestyle. And if we dig a bit deeper, we would see the difference between someone who's learning about and has information about healthy living and someone who has a healthy lifestyle. Right? There'd be specific, observable behaviors that would be different. One person would be learning about physical activity. The other person would be participating in it. Right? There'd be different, specific, observable behaviors. But do you know what? There'd also be different, specific, observable fruit from someone who was gathering information and someone who was living in a certain way. Right? You would expect a person who was living a healthy lifestyle to look a certain way, right? To act a certain way. The person who was just gathering information might learn about training, the other person would train. The other person might learn about food nutrition, the other person would actually eat in a healthy way. So the difference between lifestyle and gathering information is important, both in the specific observable actions that you would see and the specific observable fruit that it would produce. A lifestyle is different from an accumulation of knowledge. A lifestyle is a deliberately constructed way of being that's orientated towards specific goals. And it involves specific behaviors and it produces specific fruit. So when we consider Peter then and ourselves, and when we acknowledge our need for more of God, we need to be clear-headed about this. This doesn't just mean gathering more information or collecting more experiences, hoping that somehow this is magically going to undo the ingrained habits and behaviors and attitudes that we have within us. But rather, we need to listen to Paul's instruction and we need to lifestyle by the Spirit. We need to live lives that are deliberately orientated towards Jesus and involve specific behaviors and produce specific fruit. Okay, let's just kind of pull this, together for a minute. We've spoken then in depth about the process through which our lives become more and more reformed and reshaped such that Jesus is more evident within us. We've considered this phrase, I just need more of God, in light of Peter's betrayal of Jesus as a better way of understanding the process through which God works to remove these old habits of sin in our life and replace them with new habits of righteousness. Looking at Galatians 5:25, we've identified that spiritual growth and vitality come from what we actually do with our lives, recognizing that our character is a product of our habits, and that simply holding ideas in our heads or sentiments in our hearts isn't enough. Peter didn't fail because he held wrong ideas in his head, not fundamentally, or because he'd missed a particular experience. He failed because of his character. He failed because of what he stood ready to do or not do. He'd not yet been fully reformed. We finished then by considering Paul's instruction to lifestyle by the Spirit. And to work out every implication into the details of our lives. Now that's quite a lot, right? It's quite a lot of information there. But what we've still to do is identify specific strategies for doing this, right? I think it would feel kind of deficit on a sermon about working out the details in your life if we stayed high concept. So what I want to do now is I want to look at three specific strategies we can use to work this out into the details of our life so that we can have different habits, so that our character is reformed and changed, so that what we stand ready to do is different. Those three things, because I used to be a primary school teacher, alliterate. So we're going to look at practice, planting, and praise. The three specific strategies we can use to lifestyle by the Spirit towards this goal of having our lives changed. We're going to think about what we practice, what we plant, and then how we praise. So we'll start by thinking about practice. Now, I've already said I used to work in primary school. And let me tell you, working with P5, 6 girls can be a nightmare, right? It can be a nightmare because they wage psychological warfare on one another, right? If you've ever been around girls of that age, oh my goodness, the dirty looks, the snippy words, stirring up trouble. And when I used to work with these girls, I would say to them, girls, you need to be careful because you become what you practice. I'd say, girls, here's what you're practicing. You're practicing giving dirty looks. So do you know what you're getting good at? Giving dirty looks. You're practicing thinking of and then saying unkind words. So do you know what you're getting good at? Thinking of and saying unkind words. You're practicing breaking confidences. So do you know what you're getting good at? Breaking confidences. Girls, you're telling me that you want to have great relationships and friends. But the thing that you're practicing is being a bad friend. The thing that you're going to stand ready to do is be a bad friend. Give a dirty look. Say an unkind word. Right? What you practice is what you become. Geez, oh, Mr. Brown, settle down. Right? But it's true. It's true. We become the things that we practice. So what are you practicing? Dallas Willard puts it like this. Our lives are the result of what we have become in the depths of our being. Hoocha boy. Our lives are the result of what we've become in the depths of our being. So practice matters. But I want to tease this out a bit more. Now, steady yourself. I'm really sorry you're here because I'm about to do a football analogy and I know nothing about football. I was kind of hoping you were going to be on crash today. Right. So, it's dead vague, Nairn, okay? So it should be okay. It's dead vague. So, thinking about practice. Ronaldo's a football player I've heard of, right? And the kids in school, oh, Ronaldo's amazing. So they'd want to try and be like him. They admire his skill, how he is in the football match, during the game, right? The things he can do. The kids admire him. They want to be like him. They want to be as good as him. So what do? They copy him. How do they copy him? Well, when they're playing, they try and copy the moves he does, right? The way he shoots, the way he moves his hands, the celebrations he does, other football-y things, right? They wear the same, they get the same hairstyles, they buy the same boots, they get the tops. They try anything and everything that Ronaldo does, hoping they can be more like him. Right, now pay attention to this bit. Will any of that actually help them perform like Ronaldo? Of course it won't. Of course it won't. Why not? Well, what the fan sees is the 90-minute game, right? And what they admire is the skill within that 90 minutes. God, look at the way he moves, right? I want to be able to head the ball like that, right? I want to be able to kick the ball in the goal like that, right? But Ronaldo didn't achieve his excellence by trying to behave a particular way within 90 minutes, within a match. Ronaldo became excellent because he committed himself to what? A lifestyle. He committed himself to a lifestyle. He chose an overall life of preparation so that within those 90-minute windows, certain behaviors were available to him. Do you see that? But what did the children focus on? Those wee moments. I want to be like Ronaldo. I'll try and copy those wee moments, and I will ignore the overall life of preparation that Ronaldo has entered into to make those moments possible. Thus endeth the football analogy, right? It's another way of saying that we've got to focus on the cultivation of the plant that produces the fruit rather than just saying, I want the fruit. Can you see the difference? Or consider this. Say an aspiring violinist comes to Stuart and says, oh, Stuart, I want to be dead good at the violin just like you, right? It would be nonsense for Stuart to say to him or her, great, go and play Beethoven's violin concerto. It'd be nonsense. Playing Beethoven's violin concerto is not possible or available to that young musician, that wee moment of greatness. What I think Stuart would probably say or advise is that this young person go and commit themselves to an overall lifestyle of preparation. Here's what you need to do if you want to be a great musician. You need to involve yourself in a particular lifestyle. There's habits you need to do. You need to practice. You need to surround yourself with musicians. You need to read music theory. You need to listen to great performers. We don't practice to get good at practicing. We practice so that we can play. Right? So whether it's the football player or the violinist, anyone of substance would recommend the aspiring individual to enter into a lifestyle of preparation and not point them towards wee moments of greatness. But what about us as Christians? When we look at men and women of faith who inspire us, when we look at Jesus and we see these incredible moments of grace and forgiveness, of compassion, right? Of healing. What do we do? What do we notice? What are we like those fans who long to be like their favorite football player and simply copy easily adoptable behaviors and accessories? Or do we commit ourselves to the overall lifestyle that produces those things? It's easy to turn up to church with a bit of jargon, buy the latest Hillsong album, right? But we need to commit ourselves to an overall lifestyle. Listen to this quote by Philip Brooks. It's a goodie. He says, someday, in the years to come, you'll be wrestling with the great temptation or trembling under the great sorrow of your life. But the real struggle is now. Now it's being decided whether in that day of your supreme sorrow or temptation, whether you shall fail miserably or conquer gloriously. Character cannot be made except by steady, long, continued process. Right? We're going to, one day, if it's not today, at some point we're going to have something that's big and heavy. how we respond to the big and heavy is not what happens in that moment. That's like looking at the football player or looking at the musician on the stage or on the pitch and thinking, wow, that's incredible, I want to copy that, and completely neglecting the overall lifestyle that prepared them for that moment. It's a lifestyle that we're called into. Think about Peter. He'd lived with Jesus for a number of years. But when his great trial came and Jesus was arrested, what happened? The automatic tendencies ingrained within him responded to the situation. All of his great and sincere intentions weren't enough. Jesus, I'd never do that. I'd rather die than abandon you. His good intentions weren't enough. Even when Jesus had specifically said, Peter, in this specific way, you're going to be tested tonight. His good intentions, his awareness weren't enough. Because what he stood ready to do had not yet been reformed. At that moment, Peter learned firsthand about what Paul writes about in Romans. Paul says, the motions of sin, which work in our members, bring forth the fruit unto death. We find ourselves in these habits, these attitudes, these behaviors that produce a fruit, not of our liking or wanting, but fruit nonetheless. See, if we refuse to practice, it's not God's grace that fails when the crisis comes, but it's our own nature. God didn't fail Peter. Peter's character failed Peter. So when the crisis comes and we ask God to help, he can't if we haven't made our nature our ally. Let me give you a wee example. It's a really, really practical, small example, but it's mine. I have a habit of, when I get in the car to drive to work, I pray from the driveway of the car to the overpass onto the motorway. And when I'm coming home, when I get to the overpass, I pray on the way back, right? Now, that seems like that should be super easy, okay? But the number of times I'm just like, I'm really enjoying my podcast, or I'm really enjoying what's on the radio, maybe I'll just keep going. Maybe I won't. Okay? Now here's the point. These things that we have to do, they're easy to do. They're easy in that it's easy to pray in the car, right? To the overpass and back. But the problem is, it's easy not to do it. It's easy to, but it's easy not to. That's the challenge. But here's what I think. Every time I think I can't be bothered, but I do it, it's like building a spiritual muscle. In fact, it's not like building a spiritual muscle. It is building a spiritual muscle. It's building spiritual muscle. Now, it seems unimportant. And on one level, it is unimportant. But at one point, I will need to flex a spiritual muscle, and it will be important. Right? It will be. A lot more will be riding on how I respond in that moment than whether or not I do my wee prayer on the way to the overpass or not. So it matters. It's easy to do it, it's easy not to do it, but it matters. And I think that's helpful when we can see, actually, this is me building spiritual muscle now. This is why this matters. Because at one point there'll be a big decision to make, an opportunity to make a corrupt call, an opportunity to lie, to get out of a mistake that was my fault. Right? Is the spiritual muscle there or is it not? So practicing is ours. It's not God's. It's ours. God regenerates us. God puts us in contact with all of his divine resources. But God is a gentleman. He does not force people to act and behave in particular ways. It's for us to do. So what are we practicing? What are we becoming? So that's point one then. How do we lifestyle by the Spirit? We mindfully practice. Easy to, easy not to. But we've got to build that spiritual muscle. So point two then is planting. Could someone get me a wee bit more water? Sorry. Thanks, Derek. Got a right dry mouth tonight. So planting. What do we mean by planting? I want you to read you this wee extract. It's titled Tending the Garden. It says this. What can we liken our minds to? A garden. Gardens can be intelligently cared for and developed or allowed to run wild. Yet notice this, whether the garden is tended by the most expert and skilled gardener or completely neglected and allowed to run wild, the garden will bring forth There's no way to avoid this law. We reap what we sow. But I sowed no seed, you might say. Well, if no useful seeds are put into the garden, then the world will supply an abundance of useless weeds. So which garden will you live with? Which garden will you live in? Thank you, Derek. Cheers. Like the good gardener, will you tend the garden of your mind? Will you weed out the wrong and useless and impure thoughts and instead cultivate good thoughts, right, useful, and pure? Now, the point of this is everything is seed. Everything is seed. If you sow a thought, you reap an action. If you sow an action, you reap a habit. If you sow a habit, you reap a character. And if you sow a character, you reap a destiny. And this echoes just what we've been speaking about. We become what we practice. You see, Peter's failing in the garden. Sorry, we see this in Peter's failing in the garden, and we see it in our own lives. In the actions of our lives, we sow habits, and then we reap the fruits of those habits. And the point here is it starts with your thoughts. It starts with the thought seeds that you sow. Now, Sasha said to me once that we're the average of the five people we spend most of our time with. Right? I like that. I think we're also the average of the five thoughts we most often think. What are the thoughts? Oh, geez, I'm rubbish at this. For sake, nobody likes me. Right? Now think about this. If you were a parent, how much care would you give to the five people that surrounded your child and the influence that they would have over them and the way that they can shape them? Right? But what about us? How much care do we give to the psychological space that we inhabit? Right? The thoughts and the ideas that we surround ourselves with. If those thoughts were people, would you let them in your house? Right? Because if you wouldn't let them in your house, you probably shouldn't let them in your head. So the thoughts that we have are seeds, and the seeds that we plant, this is the point, there's seeds that we plant, and the law of reaping and sowing says they're going to bring forth. There'll be a harvest. So we need to pay attention to this because our thoughts and our character are linked. You see, our actions reveal the inner discussions that we have with ourselves. Yeah? And when we act, we make known the thought seeds that we've been planting. Let me tease that one out. We see this clearly in behavior that we often call outbursts. Oh, it's just a wee outburst, right? Just a wee outburst. Say a family member does something that seems fairly small, right? Like they've not put something away quite properly. And they get an over-the-top reaction. Oh, you never put anything away, blah, 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 blah. Outburst. What does the outburst reveal? It reveals the inner conversation that that person has been having with themselves. It's always me that put things away. No one else ever puts it. It's always me. People just think I'm the slave and I'm just always up to me, blah, 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 right? So what that outburst reveals is the inner dialogue you've been having with yourself. It reveals the thought seeds that you have been planting. And those thought seeds will ripen and bloom into action. So we need to be mindful of the thoughts that we plant because they will bloom into action. Those actions will bloom into habits. The habit becomes our character. So where's God in all this then? It's all dead interesting, but where's God in this? God is in our agency, right? God is in our very ability to act and to create. As Christians, I think sometimes that we forget what it means that we're made in the image of our Father. What does that mean? Who's our dad? What's his business? He's a cultivator, right? To cultivate, to grow, to create, and to form is within us, right? It's our very family likeness. It's like the family business, the family trade. We weren't made to be acted upon. We were made to act. We weren't made to be slaves. We were made to be free. But this starts in our minds. It starts with the thought seeds that we plant. It starts with the discussions that we have with ourselves. See, by choosing to think well and to surround ourselves with well-chosen thoughts, we're able to rise above those poorer aspects of our character. And we're able to see those old habits of unrighteousness and sin be replaced with habits of righteousness. And this is honoring to God, because like Paul, we can say, well, we may have done the planting or we may have done the watering, but God gives the growth. It's honoring to God. See, the farmer can manage all the conditions of his crop, but in a very real way, he cannot make the crops grow, right? There's just a wonderful partnership there between the farmer and God. Well, likewise, we need to be co-workers with God in this. We need to tend carefully the gardens of our minds. So that's the first 2 points. How do we lifestyle by the Spirit? By practice and by planting. And the last one is praise. Praise. Now, I think there are three questions that I think are maybe some of the most important questions that we ask and answer. But I think sometimes we don't even realize we're asking and answering these questions. But I think they're possibly three of the most powerful questions. And they are, what will I focus on? What does this mean? What will I do? What will I focus on? What does this mean? What will I do? Let me give you an example with a story. There's a guy called Tony and his dad. Tony was from a very, very, very poor family. And his dad was abusive. He was alcoholic and he was verbally and physically abusive, okay? They were poor because of his dad's job, but also because his dad drank any additional money that they might have had. They were struggling to eat. They didn't have enough food, okay? They would often go hungry. And one day, out of the blue, there was a knock on the door, and Tony went to the door to answer it. He was just a child at this point. And there was just a stranger there with a food parcel who said, "This is for you," right? Someone had noticed and come to the door without any request being made. Tony's dad had heard the knock on the door, heard Tony running down and answering, heard the conversation, so came lumbering up. "What's this? You think I'm a charity case? You think I'm a charity case? You think I can't look after my own family?" Went to slam the door on the man with the food parcel. The man with the food parcel put his foot to block the door and said, "Sir, don't let your children suffer for your pride." And put the food parcel on the door and walked away. Reluctantly, the food parcel was came in, the family ate. So let's think about those three questions. The dad, what did he focus on? He focused on, "I can't provide for my family." So what did it mean? "I failed as a father and as a man." So what did he do? This is a true story. He left the family the next day. He never came back. What about for Tony? What about the boy? What did he focus on? "People who don't even know me care." That's what he focused on. "People who don't even know me care." So what does it mean? It means that people are good and that there's hope. So what will I do? Well, I'll also help. Tony now has a foundation that feeds 4 million people in 56 countries every year. The asking and the answering of those three questions, look at the way the two destinies went, the two lives went, because of the way they asked and answered those questions. What will I focus on? What does this mean? What will I do? So how does this fit into praise? Well, listen to the lyrics of this song. I'm not going to sing it. "He's jealous for me, love like a hurricane, and I am a tree bending beneath the weight of his wind and mercy. When all of a sudden, I am unaware of these afflictions eclipsed by glory, and I realize how beautiful you are and how great your affections are for me. Oh, how he loves us. Oh, how he loves us. We are his portion and he is our prize, drawn to redemption by the grace in his eyes. If grace is an ocean, we're all sinking. So heaven meets earth like a sloppy wet kiss, and my heart burns violently inside of my chest. And I don't have time to maintain these regrets when I think about the way he loves us." Listen to these words again. "When all of a sudden, I'm unaware of these afflictions eclipsed by glory, and I realize how beautiful you are and how great your affections are for me." See, I think in praise, we're able to adopt a new perspective. And from this new perspective, we can find altogether different answers for those three questions. What will I focus on? What does this mean? What will I do? So to close then, Peter's failing in the garden demonstrates to us the need to retrain the habit of our lives so that in times of strain, our pre-existing sinful habits don't take over, so that what we stand ready to do has changed. And we've considered in depth that needing more of God is definitely the correct response, but equally is definitely not a passive response. And we've reflected on Paul's instruction to lifestyle by the Spirit and looked at how lifestyling by the Spirit can help us get more of God through practice and planting and praise. All right, let's pray. Father, thank you that you love us. Lord, thank you that you work with us. Thank you that you never let go of us, that your love never wavers for us. Thank you, Lord, that we have your family likeness within us, that we are cultivators, creators. That you, our Father, gave birth to the world and created us all. And as part of your family, we have that same agency and power within us to create and to form and to call life where there wasn't any and to bring shape into order where there's chaos. Lord, help us to not be passive, but to recognize that powerful well of power that's within us. Help us to be inspired, Lord, by the possibility of a closer walk with you. Lord, that the habits and patterns of our life are transformed. Lord, that we see fruit in our life. And I would just want to encourage people, if you're thinking, this is not me, right? Well, that's quite concrete. I would encourage you to think, man, those habits I've been practicing to date, because that's different from you. Changing who I am feels quite big. But just changing the things I've been practicing, it's a lot more manageable. Lord, help us to identify those things that we've been practicing that have not been serving us well. Lord, and help us change them. Lord, it's easy not to. But Father, help us to practice them. Help us to develop that spiritual muscle. Amen. Amen.